All these passageways and rooms, including this one, are brightly illuminated just as if by daylight, yet nowhere can I see a source of light. It seems as if the light were coming from the stones themselves. The equipment in this room is so mysterious that it immediately captures my full attention. The room is radiantly bright. I see a large, strange, prismatic something that gives me the impression it's made, not of solid matter, but of light. Of some kind of concentrated, solidified light. This concentrated light mass radiates ordinary light too. That's why the room is so bright. Once while I was visiting a potter, I had a chance to look through the peephole in his fiery kiln. In it several clay vessels were standing in a row, all glowing white with the heat and all completely transparent. I could see them all, one right through the other. They were all radiating light too. And this great mysterious prismatic form is radiating light in just the same way. Yes, light, but no heat. But there are still other incomprehensible objects in this room. They are made of such a strange material and in such remarkable shapes that I can't begin to imagine what purpose they could serve. But there's no time to study them, for I am completely engrossed with the question of my initiation, how it will take place and what I will experience. Tahotep leads me into the farthest corner of the room where I discover an empty stone sarcophagus. Up to now, remarks my guide and mentor, you've always heard what initiation is, but you don't know how it takes place. During initiation, the candidate's body is subjected to a higher frequency than that which corresponds to his degree of consciousness. Thus he becomes conscious on this higher level. Only a person prepared through long and strict training can be initiated in this way into a higher power, into a higher level of consciousness, without suffering harm. Only such a person is able to control his body with the help of his intellect, understanding and willpower, and to attune his nerves to higher frequencies. As you already know, animals are not able to alter either their mode of living or the condition under which they live. That's why they are not able to bear higher frequencies than their own. To take an example, if a monkey was subjected to a current of the same frequency as man's, it would die within a few minutes of a stroke, undergoing unspeakable nervous cramps while dying. Man, however, can adapt himself, up to the range of an octave, to different vibrations and bear these vibrations without death. In this way, an average person, after adequate physical preparation and training, could be subjected without damage to the current of a genius, in other words, the current of the fifth degree. He would feel a heavenly bliss. That's because every higher vibration, so long as it's bearable, induces an exhilarating feeling of happiness. Then, however, the vibration becomes a torture because the nerves are unable to bear up under the excessive current. Lower vibrations than those of the individual concerned induce dejection, fear and dismay. If an average person, because of longing for the blissful state once experienced, could later reach the state of initiation into the fifth degree and reach it often through patient and persistent practice, the nerves and cells of his body would gradually become so inured and transformed that he could really raise himself by one step upward and actually become a genius. He would go on experiencing a steady flow of intuitive knowledge. The feeling of bliss connected with a higher state of consciousness is known to every person who is gifted with intuition, and everyone who drinks wine or uses other stimulants is seeking the same blissful feeling associated with a greater flow of current through the nerves. But the artificial stimulation is always followed by a depression which throws the person further down than he was before. In the great initiation, all the currents of force corresponding to the seven levels of consciousness are conducted into the body, beginning with the lowest and moving progressively upward to the very highest divine creative currents. The candidate is initiated in all these forces and becomes conscious on all levels. For a candidate to be ready to go through this initiation and come out alive, his consciousness, and with it his power of resistance, must previously have reached the sixth level. For any creature whose consciousness had not attained this plane, the act of initiation would certainly mean death. In this way, with the help of the current of force, a candidate attains the seventh divine degree, which he never would have been able to reach alone. No one can attain initiation on the divine creative plane through his own unaided efforts. Here he goes through the great transition from his previous negative taking attitude to a positive attitude of giving. Regardless of how much he may strive to do so, no human being can go through this transition alone and unaided, although many are able through their own efforts to develop to the point where they are perfectly prepared for initiation on the seventh plane. In such cases, the laying on of hands is all that is needed to initiate them into the divine cosmic self-consciousness. Never again do such initiates fall out of divine consciousness, as they have moved through the entire cycle of total consciousness, acquiring all necessary experience as they did so, and only the reunion of their two complementary halves, each of which has become perfectly conscious, remains to be accomplished. Only this last help has to be given from the outside. From then on they live in a state of continual God consciousness. Through initiation in our temple, however, it's possible for candidates to be initiated into the divine seventh degree even though they may not have developed all the way up to the seventh degree in readiness for it. As a prerequisite for such initiation, they must have become conscious at least on the sixth plane, and they must have adequately prepared their body. Through this external aid of initiation, their path to the true self is opened, and in the act of initiation, their consciousness is linked up with the divine flow of power. These candidates are not able, after initiation, to continue living in the divine state of consciousness. They fall back to their previous state. But they remember the bliss they experienced in initiation, and as their path to God has been opened for them, they enjoy the possibility of attaining the seventh plane of development faster and easier than by merely following the long path of earthly experience and human development of consciousness. Initiation High, the temple is thus able to bring back many more people to the bliss of union with the divine self than would be possible without this aid. On the other hand, there is a danger that a person initiated in this way, after his initiation and before he is able to become a godman through his own efforts, may not be able to resist earthly temptations and thus falls lower than in his first fall. This danger does not exist for the uninitiated. If, without initiation, a person completes his cycle of living along the long path of mortals all the way to the end, to the great goal, until he returns home to the Garden of Eden, there remains nothing in experience, nothing unknown in him. He achieves the divine plane after having gained experience on all levels, in this way gradually effacing his person. To achieve this, however, it takes a living creature an entire age of creation. It is God's will for the great initiation in the temple to continue to be available to mankind for some time to come in spite of this danger. Countless people have already been redeemed in this way and brought back to God, and many more will be. And the few who relapse after their initiation will reincarnate themselves in later times when mankind is left to its own resources. They will remember the great truths they experienced through their initiation and will proclaim these truths to their fellow men in their words, writings and actions. The secret of the great initiation will be guarded high the temple for some time yet. But when more and more earth-minded people come into power in times to come, we will close the initiation pyramid with blocks of stone from the inside and will dematerialize everything in the initiation chamber. The secret of divine creative energy will not fall into uninitiated hands. Thousands of years later, when people break into the pyramids, they will find nothing, absolutely nothing, not even human skeletons. There are many souls on earth today who fulfill the prerequisites for the great initiation. It is our duty to initiate all of these candidates if, despite our warning, they repeat three times their wish to be initiated. In initiation, the candidate becomes conscious on every plane of creation. All unconscious portions of his soul become conscious. He has no subconscious and no superconscious. During his initiation, the consciousness of the initiate becomes whole, total all consciousness. The circle which began with his becoming conscious in matter, in the body, the moment he fell from unity, is closed. The candidate consciously unites with his own complementary half, which previously was always present as an unconscious portion of his soul, like a negative image, a strange being, and which because of its power of attraction manifested itself as longings, powerful urges and unrest in his body. The consciousness returns to unity, and there is no longer a complementary half, for the complementary half has also been made conscious. This reunion we call mystic marriage. Apostrophe marriage always means a union of positive and negative. On earth, however, marriage means the vain attempt to achieve union with another being in the body. But the mystic union of the spirit takes place in the consciousness and brings complete, never-ending fulfillment, for the union with one's own complementary half means union with God. The circle is closed again. The human body is so constructed that it contains a special nervous center for each octave of vibration. On the one hand, these nerve centers are distributors, sending out through the nervous system the vibrations they receive from higher centers. On the other hand, they act as transformers when they pass on vibrations to the next nerve center below. In the ordinary human being, these transformers in nerve centers work separately from his consciousness. That's why he can't control them. The laws of nature control him without his knowing what is taking place in his body and in his soul, in his subconscious. In his initiation, the candidate must consciously experience the high flow of current in all seven major nerve centers and the powers corresponding to them. With his consciousness, he first descends to the lowest sphere of creation. He must experience the forces ruling there and become master of them. This is his first test. When he passes it successfully, he moves up one degree into the second octave of vibration, recognizing and experiencing it in order to master it. This is the second test. Then he climbs on into the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and finally into the seventh octave of vibration. When he has passed all these tests and succeeded in consciously remaining master in all these spheres, then he has become an initiate. Consciousness is light, unconsciousness is darkness. When we see light above us on earth, we say it's day. Thus each state of consciousness is a day of God, for in each consciousness, from the lowest plane of matter up to the God-man's consciousness of self, God recognizes himself on the different levels. On all these days, on all the levels of consciousness, there is activity, unrest, motion, except on the seventh day of God, when there is no activity, no motion, no work. On the seventh day creation ceases, because on this day there is complete unity and perfect equilibrium. Then God rests within himself. When, after his initiation, an initiate succeeds in becoming conscious again in the eternal being and experiences this divine state again during his meditation, and when he succeeds often enough in thus raising himself by his own power from his normal sixth plane up to the seventh divine plane. In time he consolidates his position definitively on this level of consciousness, and the divine creative plane is the one he live on day in and day out. Then and then only does he become a God-man. Only a person who, in his consciousness, is peace and calm itself, so that everything he does, thinks and feels flows forth naturally out of this divine state, manifesting God's will always and under all circumstances, always radiating only positive giving forces of divine love, only such a person is truly a son of God, a God-man, Tahotep. The God-man consciously manifests and controls all seven levels of creation. But his consciousness identifies itself only with the seventh, divine plane, not with the lower ones. He knows them, masters them, uses them, but does not eat of these fruits of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. He consciously remains in God, in the paradisiacal state. He unites within himself all seven planes in divine unity. He is matter, has a body, is a plant, animates, nourishes and cares for his body as for a good instrument. He is animal, he has instincts and feelings, he is a man, he has intellect and the power of logical thought. He is a genius. He has intuition and works out of the plane of causes. He is a prophet. He stands above time and space, seeing the future and the past, loving the entire universe with selfless, all-inclusive love, helping all creatures towards redemption from the fetters of the world, and he is a God-man. He is omniscient and omnipotent. He is what he is, the eternal being, life itself, God. Initiates, as you can see, are not all of the same degree. Most of them only reach the seventh degree after further development. That's why there are different degrees in the priesthood. The duties of a high priest can only be fulfilled by one who has reached the seventh degree of the God-man with his own power, no longer expecting and receiving the highest divine power, the way the candidate expects and receives it during his initiation. On the contrary, the high priest radiates and gives out this highest divine power himself. Six of the seven degrees of consciousness receive their creative vibrations, the power of life, from the seventh degree, from God. Even the initiate who has been able to reach the seventh divine degree only during his initiation, still expects and receives the creative power of life from the seventh degree, from God. Only God and those who have become identical with God are truly and exclusively munificent in their radiations. Matter, on the other hand, as a negative reflected image of God, only receives. All beings on the other levels receive from above and transmit to the levels below. The plant has a vitalizing effect on matter, while on the other hand it receives fivefold from the levels of intelligence above it. The animal gives off twofold to the levels below it, while receiving threefold from those above. Man gives threefold towards the levels below him and receives threefold from those above, as his consciousness stands in the middle of the seven planes. As the consciousness of the genius is on the fifth plane, the plane of causes, he radiates his creative powers out over the four levels below, while he receives power only from the two highest. The prophet, the initiate, transmits his beneficent vibrations to the beings on the five lower levels of consciousness and receives his power from the divine level. He still lives in a dualistic relationship with God. Only a person who has attained perfect cosmic consciousness by his own efforts emits positive radiation, and only positive, in all directions, life-giving and munificent towards the entire universe. He lives in God, in monistic consciousness of self. You have already learned that giving, radiating, is the law of God, of the spirit, while taking, contraction, is the law of matter. Every frequency has a powerful and penetrating effect on the levels below it, whereas it has no effect on those above. If you take two people on different levels of development, the person on the lower level, although he may be a bad person in the view of people about him, can only harm the person on the higher level through deeds, but never through his radiation, as his powers have no effect on the levels above his. On the other hand, his radiation, especially his evil eye, can do harm on the levels below his level of consciousness. An initiate, on the other hand, can transmit his high magic power to every living being without exception. During initiation, the divine creative power will flow through your spinal column, reaching each of your seven major nerve centers in turn, and you will experience this power as a state of consciousness on each level. But remember very carefully what I'm telling you now. When you become conscious in one octave and vibration, you are in tune with this frequency, and its whole sphere represents absolute reality for you. When you have passed the test in one degree, you will waken in the next sphere and realize that you were only dreaming on the level below. But if you don't pass the test, that is, if you identify yourself with the events and don't succeed in remaining master of them, all of these dream pictures remain real for you, and you'll have to experience all of them to the very end as real events in the world of time and space. That would mean that your body would die here in this coffin and you would have to go on dreaming your own dream pictures in countless reincarnations, on the long path of mortal existence, for many thousands of years, while you gradually struggled upward from this lower level to which you would have fallen. The difference between dream and reality is only that what you accept on one level of consciousness as reality immediately turns into a dream when you awaken on a higher level of consciousness and realize that it wasn't reality at all, but merely a projection of the self, in other words, a dream. Every dream is reality as long as you believe it to be real. The one and only reality, the only objective reality there is the Self, God. When you pass all the tests, you experience all the lives that you would have to experience as a fallen soul on Earth. Free of time and space, you experience them as dreams, awakening on the next level of consciousness. Finally, you awaken on the seventh level, in the cosmic consciousness of the Self. In this divine state, you become one with the last unit, highest and only reality, with yourself, with God. This is no longer an awakening, but a resurrection. Then you have been liberated from your person, which also is only a projection, liberated from your personal fate. You are redeemed. After that, you will fulfill the duties of a priestess in the temple. Then, if through further practice you succeed in raising yourself up to the seventh level through your own efforts, keeping yourself his level as a permanent state of consciousness, you will have attained the divinity of a God person. Then you will be worthy to become a high priestess in the temple. Father of my soul, I asked Ahotep, you've told me that it's possible for a person to fall from the higher consciousness even after he has been initiated. You've also told me that the initiate, when he identifies himself with his body and thus channels his higher energies into his body, falls lower than an ordinary person living in physical reality. Another thing you've told me is that a candidate, during his initiation, experiences his whole future destiny, just as it has been provided for from the moment of his first fall all the way back up to his return home into divine unity. So how is it possible for an initiate, who has dreamed all the events and trials and temptations of his destiny and who has, during his initiation, successfully passed all the tests that might later cause him to fall again, how is it possible for such an initiate to fall later in the three-dimensional world of time and space? If he has seen his entire destiny all the way to the end as a dream, why hasn't he also dreamed about his fall as part of his future destiny? When a boomerang is thrown out, answers Tahotep, how it will fly and how long it will take to complete its circuit are factors that are already known the moment it's thrown. So it carries within itself its entire career as an immutable future fate. It would be possible, however, for an external force to catch it in the middle of its orbit and bring it back to its starting point and goal in shorter time and by a shorter path. The boomerang would thus have returned home. But because it maintains its original form and weight, it still carries within itself the possibility of being thrown out again and making another circuit, because this possibility is given by virtue of its form and weight. An initiate who has attained initiation by means of external aid resembles this boomerang. He has dreamed his entire future destiny out to the end, to his return into divine unity, but he has experienced these conditions only in his consciousness. His person and his personal circumstances, which arise from his character and fate, still remain in the material world. With his initiation, he has not ended his present life, just as you, after your initiation, will still be the daughter of the Pharaoh and the representative of the Queen. And if an initiate has not gathered all the necessary earthly experience before his initiation, if he has not got acquainted with all the creative forces within himself and learned to control them, he is to some extent still inexperienced when he returns home into the divine state of unity. This means that he is not yet completely liberated from the personal composition of his powers and his personality is not yet completely annihilated. During the intervening time until such an initiate is able to reach the seventh degree by his own efforts and maintain himself in it as a perpetual state of consciousness, he carries within himself the possibility and the danger of falling again from his high scale of consciousness and starting on a completely new wheel of destiny. Because he has become conscious in the divine creative power, however, even though with external aid, this tremendous power throws him out again, and then he must go through a much larger cycle than was the case after his first fall before he became conscious in the divine power. The black magicians, for example, who destroyed the home of the sons of God have fallen to the lowest plane of creation. They now lie as mountains, rocks and stones on the earth and must work their way up through ages and ages along the path of consciousness from inert matter through the realms of plant and animal life, up to the human level again. Some of them fell only as far as the plant or animal level, while others fell only to one of the other levels of human existence. The course a creature runs through in the material world takes a definite amount of time, but individual creatures can always run through the circle in a shorter time and reach their goal thousands or even millions of years earlier. This, however, is only possible for man. Only man, thanks to his conscious use of intellect, can experience states of consciousness without reference to time. Animals and plants are not able to do this. Now you can understand why animals too must suffer. Like everything else on earth, they are limited manifestations of consciousness of fallen spirits that once lived on a high plane. In the initiation, all the negative forces that were made manifest in the fall from a higher level of consciousness are offset by positive forces. The debts are thus paid. After you have successfully passed your initiation, you'll enter a condition without fate. As long as you manifest God's will, you will have no person of your own and consequently no fate of your own. You will be free of the law of action and reaction. But if you identify yourself in your consciousness with your person, with your body, you'll create a new wheel of fate for yourself and again be subject to innumerable reincarnations. Now you know all the consequences of initiation. And I'm asking you again one last time. Do you have the courage to go through with initiation? With perfect self-assurance, I answer, yes. A tall, dignified man then enters the room. I know him. He is a priest of the highest degree, a high priest too, Tahotep's representative. He steps over towards us. Then Tahotep motions to me to get into the sarcophagus and lie down in it. I do as he commands. As I lie in the sarcophagus, Tahotep casts a last glance at me, full of infinite love, and then the two priests lift the stone cover and lay it over me. In pitch darkness I lie there enclosed in the stone coffin. The initiation. As usual, I watch what happens. Nothing happens. I lie in the stone coffin and peer into the darkness. Darkness? It's not really darkness. For in the middle of my field of vision I observe a greenish phosphorescent light. Around it points of light seem to flash up and then disappear. I watch these points of light and try to guess where they come from and where they are going. Suddenly I notice that the points of light, when they appear, aren't as close together as they were. On the contrary, right in the middle, where the greenish phosphorescent light was before, there's an empty space that none of the points of light approaches. They leave more and more space around this spot which, because of the complete absence of light in it, is a pitch black hole through which I peer into nothingness. Then I notice two points of light that appear in this total, dead darkness. Slowly they come closer and stare at me like two eyes. I don't see the eyes, they have neither light nor color, and yet I'm obliged to see them. I know that two eyes are staring at me. These two eyes do not belong to a body. They are centers of force of streams of energy which take effect invisibly. These dim, black energies attack the points of light. The points of light are sucked up by this force, destroyed. A contour appears, creating a boundary around this empty, dark hole that radiates this invisible force. Before my horrified eyes, there gradually appears a face. The eerie features of a monster. A silhouette that is only recognizable because where it is there is absolute nothingness, a negative image. I know, I just know this disembodied monster is evil itself. I know it. I've seen its horrible grimaces occasionally glowering through human faces as the expression of those faces. Now the cause of that expression, the being itself, without a human face, without a body, is here. Or was it always present and I just didn't notice it? This bodiless face resembles the head of a goat. The silhouette clearly shows the form of horns over a long, pinched face that ends with a little goatee. Or perhaps, are all these shapes only radiations of invisible forces? The being's eyes, set so close together, have a terrifying effect, like bottomless maelstroms that irresistibly pull everything down, down, down to complete annihilation. Through these two baleful eyes, the monster now radiates all his fearful powers upon me and into me.